This is Cave Scott Allen of otico.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded at NDC London, January 20, 2017. I'm talking to Ben Hall, who just did a talk today on
Windows containers and deploying to Windows Server 2016.
Okay. And part of what was fun for me about this was your two demo apps were Nerd Dinner and MVC Music Store 2.0, which was from 2010.
Yeah, May 25th, 2010. What a beautiful day that would have been for yourself when you released it to Codeplex.
Yes, yes. So for people that don't know, I mean, the buzz around Docker for a long time has been it's a Linux thing, right? So how do these things apply?
Indeed. So yeah, for the last, 3 years now, I think Docker's just coming up to its third birthday. It's kind of transformed how you can deploy applications to Linux. It makes it much more automatable, much more repeatable. Much easier to manage dependencies and configuration and have it as a build pipeline. And so early on last year, Microsoft announced they were announcing it for Windows Server, and it will be part of Windows Server 2016, and that was released at build last year. And so now we have all the beautiful tooling, what you'd expect from Linux, available to us as part of Windows, and now we can deploy Windows containers.
Okay. So there's the Windows Server, and then what about if I'm developing locally and I don't want to develop on Windows Server?
Indeed. Obviously, like back in Windows 2000, we'd all run in it, even though it's a server OS, we'd all run it at our dev machines at the same time. But Windows 10 is actually a really cool operating system and a lot of benefits and a lot of advantages. So Microsoft have made it possible to run Windows containers and build Windows containers and have all of the management, which you'd expect from the server, available on Windows 10. And so you can start building, testing, playing around, seeing how it works, making sure it's happy, and then you could push it off to a Team City or Team Foundation server, have that build and then deploy it onto a proper professional server operating system like Windows Server 2016.
Okay. So there's the quote from Jurassic Park. You were so excited about that you could do something, you forgot to ask if you should or something like that. Jeff Goldblum's going to punch me for that one. But why should I do this? Like, is it just a cool parlor trick or do I get anything out of it?
That's always a good question. And everything, all of these new shiny tooling, you should always ask why and should. So there's a lot of benefits from containers alone, but I think on Windows, it becomes even more essential. Windows has historically, from my viewpoint at least, hasn't had a great automation story. It's not been the most easiest thing to automate and have a nice pipeline about how to deploy applications. Yes, PowerShell made everything a lot simpler, and we've got PowerShell commandlets, which will allow us now to automate IIS deployments, etc. But you still had to wrap that in something, and you still had to manage that in a certain way. And this is where Windows Containers kind of simplifies that approach. It kind of gives you a framework and a foundation to work within, and tooling and builds tooling around it that makes sense and is connected and coherent. And it's a standard approach that if you go to one project using Docker, it will look very familiar to another project which is using Docker. And that's kind of why I did the two demos of your apps, so the Nerd Dinner and the Music Store, because one is like 6 years old, hasn't been touched in a very long time. You've been letting it go. Like, I'm really disappointed it's not been maintained.
That would have thrown it off if I made a commit like last night.
Of course. That would have completely threw me. Going like, oh, and it's just been released. So you've got that, which has like not been touched, probably automating that wasn't even thought about at the time. It was like, we deployed this manually, and that's kind of what that was the world at that point in time. Yet now we've progressed, and we can automate it, and we can release our Docker containers. And then with the new shiny MVC Music Store, which has been ported to .NET Core and has kind of been maintained and kept up to date, it still works in exactly the same way. You still use the same approaches and technologies and the same build pipeline for both of these sides of the world. And so you're starting to make a more consistent experience, no matter what your application is doing.
So that's something where, the demos you see and a lot of the posts and everything you read about are like, hey, .NET Core, ASP.NET Core running on Docker, because that's that's running on Linux and all that. So, but that's something people don't think about maybe as much as the moving like a web forms app or whatever, right? I mean,
yeah, so exactly, because it wasn't really possible. Like, it was only very recently that this was introduced into Windows Server. And I think people still still consider that it's designed for the even more modern ways and more modern technologies. But it's not. It's been designed for Windows. And it's been designed to support the types of scenarios which people are actively deploying. And like web forms is still actively being maintained and they're still a part of a big ecosystem. So being able to now move that along and make it simpler to maintain, simpler to manage, is going to benefit everyone. And it's going to make it simpler to keep rolling out updates to it.
So, you know, as part of this, and I'm thinking, you know, okay, we're virtualizing a legacy application. Like there's a common pattern for that where people will move things onto like a Hyper-V container, right? And then, or a Hyper-V instance, and then they'll have multiple Hyper-V, you know, images up on a Hyper-V server that's got, this is our legacy VM server or whatever. So how does, what does Docker offer me that's any better than just doing that?
So it's all about, for me, it's all about the overhead which come with virtual machines. Like virtual machines are, it's a significant investment and it's a significant thing to deploy. And that's why virtual machines generally hang around a lot longer than what we anticipate. Because they take like between 10 and 20 minutes to actually boot up in the first place. So you don't really want to be doing that, like scaling at a particular scale. Like people do on Azure and it's great and it works for them. But it's also, they've invested a lot of time and effort in making sure that happens. And also there's the whole maintaining, there's updating, there's rebuilding and redeploying new versions. And I think I just personally find virtual machines a heavy thing to manage and think about. And it takes consideration. Whereas containers, because it's been focused from the ground up and it's been focused on automation, like rolling out updates to Windows is not a, it's just one of the things which you do. And it's just been designed that way. And you just increment the version number to whatever the Windows build you want to target. And then you just roll out a new build. And it's part of that pipeline instead of it being another consideration you have to take into account. And with that, it's also lightweight. You don't have the guest operating system. You don't have to pre-allocate Windows 8 gig of RAM to run Nerd Dinner. The only thing the container takes is what the application is using. So if it's a really small, lightweight application, it's not going to take many resources and much consumption because it's in a container in comparison to running it in a virtual machine.
So density-wise, if I'm running a bunch of these legacy apps, I can pack a lot more on or I can scale them up or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, you can start running them. You could put a load balancer in front of them and start load balancing them and start introduce replication. You can add more redundancy, but fundamentally, you can just start packing hardware a lot more effectively and start kind of thinking about how you want to maintain these instances. Like if it's a legacy application, which is barely used and like barely accessed, but that one person needs it once a month, having that running in a 24/7 machine in Azure is kind of be expensive. But having that running as a container alongside the other 20 apps that that department needs, each one accessed once a month, it kind of starts making more sense and it kind of starts just making it easier to maintain both in development and in operations and production.
And then going back to what you said at the beginning, the part about those Docker files and then also Docker Compose, right? You kind of have it documented, whereas if I'm clicking to create a virtual machine, nobody's going to know how that, like, you know what I mean? How
exactly.
I set that.
Yeah, It's all about having it executable, and it's all about having your infrastructure with executable code now. So you don't have that Word document with screenshots going like, you need to tick this, this, and this. And if you forgot to, then you'll get this error, and you have to go back to step one. It's now like it's part of your source code. It's your Docker file is the instructions, which are a list of all the commands required in order to get your application running. So with Nerd Dinner, it was like install ASP.NET V4, configure a new IIS website, copy over the source control, and everything was happy. With MVC, it was like .NET restore, .NET build, .NET run.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that normal workflow which we do on a daily basis. And that's all in your source code now. It's all sitting there alongside it. And then you've got Docker Compose, which is a way to group all the dependencies for different containers and bring them up as one coherent command and cluster. So if you've got your Redis, your SQL server, your Memcache layer, and your web app, you can run that one command, and it will bring up and pull down everything it requires to get started.
So there's a few different flavors that you kind of touch on too, because there's you showed Nano and Hyper-V containers and all that. Like, when do I start? How do those fit in?
Indeed. So Server 2016 introduced four key components to make Windows containers work. So you've got two new operating systems, which have been designed to run inside of containers. So that's Windows Server Core and Windows Nano Server. So Windows Server Core is kind of like your legacy operating system. It's got all of the Win32 compatible APIs. This is what you're designed to really pick up, like the legacy, more legacy applications, drop them into a container. And the aim is that it should just work out of the box without you having to make any code changes, because it's fundamentally a Windows operating system. So it's got all of the things which you would expect from a Windows operating system. Where Windows Nano Servers, the more lightweight, refreshed version of Windows, is that all of the 32-bit APIs removed. It's only 64-bit. So that already took a huge amount of the legacy support just out of it. So it's a lot more lightweight. It's a lot more streamlined. And it's just easier to run and deploy and move around different systems.
I liked how you described that as the Ubuntu versus Arch Linux, right?
Indeed. So you've got Ubuntu, which had been, or Debian, which had been around for the last 10 years. And that's kind of like Windows Server Core. Like you can throw anything at it and the chances are it's going to work. Where you've got Windows Nano, which is like Alpine, like the really nice, really refreshed kind of like new way of thinking about operating systems, with, and have kind of left all the legacy bits behind and removed them, which made it work and really cut down and really streamlined. But also deploy your application, you're probably going to need to make some code changes or be targeting something like .NET Core, which obviously just works everywhere because it's amazing.
And I cut you off before you got to the Hyper-V containers.
Yeah, so that's the operating systems which live inside of your containers and get the application working. And then you've got two ways to run. You've got Windows containers and Windows Hyper-V containers. Windows containers are like the application packaged up. You start them, they're secure, they're scalable, they're super quick, they're super effective. Windows Hyper-V containers just add that additional level of security. So with Windows containers and Docker in general, it provides kernel virtualization. So you're still reusing and taking advantage of the host operating system, which gives you a lot of performance benefits, and that's how you can reduce a lot of the overhead in starting the process in the first place, because everything's already started and waiting. But with Windows Hyper-V container, it wraps it and makes it slightly more secure by having a different kernel running in between. And so this is very good for highly audited environments, like if you're very restricted and PCI compliant, it's a way to say that, yes, nothing else is interacting with this container, and we can guarantee that because it's actually running inside of a Hyper-V environment. Or if you're like Azure and you're running other people's third-party codes, which may be kind of like maliciously trying to get you, then maybe that's more wise to run it inside of a Hyper-V, just in case they do come across a zero day and they can then use that to interact with other parts of the host operating system, which would be a little bit embarrassing.
Yeah.
We wouldn't want that.
You talked about that, like the multi-tenant scenario, yeah. Right? So if I want that kernel isolation between them.
Exactly. And it's that multi-tenancy where just if anything did happen, it would be embarrassing. The kind of Hyper-V container gives you that guaranteed security that they would have to break out of Hyper-V. And like Hyper-V has been battled hard in the last 5 years. And so that's a whole nother set of exploits which they'd have to do, and then you probably that's a whole other effort to get there. And so there's lots of layers of security and lots of things they would have to jump through to get there.
Okay. And speaking of that, you've had some experience with this kind of stuff recently with Katacoder, right?
Indeed, yeah. So Katacoder is an online interactive learning platform for software developers. So we have made an effort to make it as interactive and hands-on as possible. So you get a step-by-step tutorial, which guides you through things like deploying containers, deploying Kubernetes, which manages containers at scale. And so you get a step-by-step guide, but also an interactive environment, which has been pre-configured with Docker. It's got everything which you require, and it's all accessible through the browser. So you don't have to sign up. You don't have to enter credit card details, email addresses. It just gives you access to a terminal, which is kind of more or less a complete virtual machine. And so people have a lot of fun just kind of poking around, seeing what they can do, seeing if they can break out, trying to see how far the container security model kind of goes. And to Twitter, it's been going so far. Okay.
So, and are there like pro versions or like, how, you know what I mean? Is it, can I pay you money for it somehow?
So we're working on different models. So the main model which we're working on at the moment is working with vendors and helping them showcase their products and making it easier for them to deliver their products to customers as like trial versions and test drives. So the users can see the benefits without going through the hurdles of getting it set up and getting it downloaded and getting everything configured correctly. You can deliver a shiny pre-built environment which showcases all the amazing features in seconds to the customer without them having to download or install anything. Yeah. And we're also now working on versions designed for teaching classroom training. So instead of that first hour, so it's 2 hours getting everyone's laptop set up, they can just go like, it's all ready and all the materials on Katacoda. It's got all the right tooling, all the right build configs. And then you would have that step-by-step process to get people to complete the exercise at that same time, which is working very well. Well, worked very well for me this week when I delivered the Docker training. So.
Right, right. Okay. So I wanted to kind of wrap up. Is there anything big that I missed here?
No, the next big thing will be Azure Container Service. And obviously that's now awesome for Linux containers, and I've got Docker Swarm, which is the way to manage them. We're going to see a lot more effort being pumped into that with things like Kubernetes, which I mentioned, coming along and having more close integration into Azure, and also Windows Container Support on Azure Container Service, all managed by Kubernetes. And then you can start collaborating and joining clusters. So you can have workloads managed and deployed onto Linux, workloads managed and deployed onto Windows, all through that one centralized interface. And then you can start kind of moving around and optimizing your workflows depending on how what's required. And that will get us to the like awesome kind of like futurized world of deployments. And then we can start optimizing for work patterns and costs and how we want to deploy either on-premise or in the cloud and et cetera. So that's going to be quite exciting, I think.
Okay. And one last curveball question. When you're not, you know, developing and Katacoda and all that, do we have anything you do for fun? Any hobbies?
Dude, I run a startup. Like, seriously. Speaking at conferences is my break.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Excellent. No, thank you for your time.
Cheers. Okay.